Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Big Book Awakening Workshop with Tyla and Josie. I'm so glad you're all here. I know that some people aren't here, but I'm so glad that the people that are sticking with this and staying with it, and so many of you have, and I just want to tell you, you know, not only am I proud of you, but I know that sometimes this is hard. Persevering through this work sometimes can be painful and you just want to quit, but, you know, staying with it, the rewards are huge. And I'm glad that you're all here. And tonight we're going to do sex inventory, relationship conduct inventory. And then next week will be 5, 6, and 7. The following week will be Jose on forgiveness. And we will then be breaking for 3 weeks, which you have all have the schedule for 3 weeks, and be back on the 20th of July. Okay. And I sent everybody the schedule. So before we get started, are there any questions that anybody has about this schedule? Okay. Let me just get the music up. There, the music is almost coming on. It's a little bit touchy sometimes. Okay. Okay, so would someone like to say the set-aside prayer? Page 55, you know, who wants to say it in the Big Book Awakening? Who's got one with them? You have one, Robert? Would you? What? Robert has one. Unmute, please, Robert. 55, thank you, Robert.
I've got it at page 55. Oh, okay, I'm with you. Mm-hmm. God, please help me face and be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me from you, other people, and myself. Just that one?
Yes. Please help me see the truth about my conduct in relationships.
Okay. Help me see the truth. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's get quiet for a minute. Okay, welcome back. And I have some notes and some stuff to share with you. Can you all hear me okay? Can you hear me okay, guys? Can you hear me, Robert? Okay, I'm gonna ask for a couple readers. I'm gonna do a little different tonight. Robert and Kimberly, would you guys be readers tonight? Robert, would you be a reader out of the Big Book? I'm gonna tell you what to read. We're gonna go paragraph by paragraph. Robert, you're going to read first to the, as we go paragraph by paragraph. Kimberly, you'll read second, okay? A couple things that, is everyone solid about their fear grid? Because that they think they understand it and that they finished it. Is there anyone that hasn't finished it? You know, you guys are just doing awesome. You know, I don't know what Joe would say, but you guys have stayed up with the work, I think, better than any group I've ever worked with. And it's awesome to have that. I want to go back to fear inventory for a second, just to the prayer, okay? Remember, what first of resentment. One of the things with resentment inventory is that third column is me trying to have my own way. My selfishness, my playing God, me having to have my own way and trying to get my own way. And based in my selfishness, what, how I think it should be, how the place should be, how it should look, and all driven by fear. And then when it says in the fear prayer, it says that they trust their God. It says, instead, we let God, let him demonstrate through us what he can do. This is the last paragraph on fear on page 68. We ask him to remove our fear and to direct our attention to what he would have us be. That prayer, that's the fear prayer. And that prayer is, what would God have me be right now in front of the person I'm talking about? That goes right over into my conduct relationships. Not would God have me be in this universal lofty idea. What does God want me to be right now in front of Kimberly talking to Kimberly? You know, and that's a prayer I say inside of myself when I'm, when I remember enough. God, you know, if I'm it's talking to someone, maybe having a hard time inside, I'll say, God, who do you want me to be in this situation? Okay. So Robert, would you read the first paragraph? It's starting on the bottom of 69 to a little bit in towards a third of, 68 to about a third of 69, right there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes. Perhaps one set of voice cries that sex is a lust of the lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institutions of marriage. We think that most of our troubles, or most of the troubles of the human, of the race, are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Okay, stop there. Okay. So it starts off now about sex, and it says to us, and Robert, you stay unmuted. You're the perfect person to answer this. I want something else for you to answer. Many of us needed an overhauling there. The big book is not saying a tune-up. If you know the difference between a tune-up and an overhaul, Robert knows a lot about cars. What's the difference between a tune-up and an overhaul? An engine, or you overhaul it. What's the difference?
Right. So like with a tune-up, everything's pretty well functioning properly. You just want to keep it that way. With an overhaul, there's a failure to where you've got to tear everything down and put everything back together piece by piece.
You got to rebuild the whole engine.
Right.
Well, so what they're saying to us there is, thank you, Robert. What they're saying to us there is, my sex conduct, my relationship conduct needs to be torn apart and rebuilt by who? God. Rebuilt completely anew. No tune-up, no spark plugs. My spark plugs were working overtime anyway. So I need a complete overhauling in this area, right? And I love that. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. These are questions I need to ask myself, and you need to ask yourself, and you need to ask the people you work with. One set of voices cry that sex is the lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Oh, I would never have thought that. Oh, you only have sex when you're making a baby. Hell no. You know, that was not my thing, but maybe it was yours, and you need to ask that. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex. That's me. Who bewail the institution of marriage. Did I? Yes, I did. I bewailed the institution of marriage. I thought marriage was ridiculous. You know, I'm from the 60s. You know, we were all hippies. None of us were getting married. We were doing it all the time, and getting married was ridiculous. You know, we just went down the happy trail with each other naked on LSD. You know, nothing mattered then. Who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes? I thought they were. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. Did I think that? Yes, I did. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, right? So they're saying one would have us on a real, oh my God, what happened? I'm sorry, you guys, someone just called me and screwed this thing up. So right there, it's saying, allow man no flavor for his fare, would have us on a really strict, you know, you only have sex with your wife, you only have a missionary position, you don't have any fun. That is no flavor for my fare, okay? And it says, the other would have us on all on a straight pepper diet. Wild, that was me, I was taking too much pepper. You too, Joe. We wanna stay out of this controversy. We do not wanna be the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. I don't wanna be the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. I wanna stay out of this controversy, but it doesn't mean I do. As a sponsor, if someone I'm sponsoring is having a relationship or getting on into a relationship with someone that's new in the program, I am going to say something. I'm going to share my experience about it. I do get involved where I think I have experience to be helpful. It doesn't mean I want to be, but I do. We all have sex problems. Is that me? Oh, yeah. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Okay, Robert, you read the next paragraph, please.
We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it.
Okay, thank you. So these are the 9 questions, the basic outline of them. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had I hurt? This question, the next one, is very important. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Not only now that I've learned something else about this, I look at where I aroused it, where I caused it in others by my behavior. I also look at how I brought it into the relationship. How did I bring jealousy, bitterness, and suspicion into the relationship? And I'll give you an example of it, if Kimberly will remind me when I get into reading the examples, because it's easy to see where I aroused it, but from my history, let's say that I come into a relationship with a very bad history. All my history with relationships was horrible, but I come in, I got a lot of paranoia. They're going to leave me. They're going to do this. So what I do is I bring my suspicion, my jealousy, and my bitterness. I'm paranoid that I'm listening to their phone calls. I'm watching where they're going. So not only do I arouse it, but I bring it into the relationship. Does that make sense to you guys? Okay. So you could look at it both ways. Okay, so where were we at fault? And when that question, which is on the questionnaire, I like to look at where was I at fault, but also where was I at fault reacting out of fear? Because there's no place on that, on the inventory that we do for fear. And I think fear is important. So one of the things I put it in was, where was I at fault? You don't have to, but it was helpful for me. Not only did I look where was at fault, but reacting out of fear, okay? What should I have done instead? Question 9, we got this all down on paper and looked at it. Robert, would you read? Thank you, honey.
In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to the test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remember always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed.
Thank you. In this way, we tried to shape this sane and sound ideal for our future sex life, a sane and sound God-given sexual ideal for our future sex life, for the future conduct and relationships based on question 9. That's what this is about. It isn't just about where was I selfish and all that. This is about shaping a sane and sound God-given sexual conduct ideal. We subjected each relationship to this test. It's a good question to ask when you're in a fifth step or when you're writing, was it selfish or not? If I was in it, it was selfish. Not, I had some that weren't so much in sobriety, but especially all the ones I wrote on early, early recovery. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good. And when I came into this program, behind prostitution, I was a call girl and all the stuff that I did, I never thought my sex powers were good. And when I read this, it said that my sex powers were God-given and therefore good. I couldn't believe that when I was new in the program. I thought, that'll never be me. Nothing good about my sex conduct didn't bring me anything good or anyone else. And I was so wounded and damaged from it. I couldn't imagine that statement to ever be true in my life. And today it is. I see it differently today because I've done a lot of inventory and I've had some good relationships. Neither to be used lightly. Used lightly means I'm at a meeting and there's a newcomer guy. He's kind of needy, lonely, and I decide that I'm going to make contact with him, not paying attention to the consequences of what that might do to him if I get involved with him, or he thinks I'm interested in him when I'm really not. I need to give these new people a chance to get their own sexual ideal before anyone is really able to have a healthy sex relationship. And the people I sponsor, if I sponsor someone that is not in a relationship when they come to me, I ask them not to date. I know you hear it in the rooms, don't date for a year. That's out of the Living Sober book. I ask them not to date until they finish till step seven, because I want them to have a spiritual awakening in the area of sex, because otherwise they're going to be doing it with the same stuff. And if they're not willing to do it, I won't work with them, because I'm not going to compete with the insanity of a relationship when they're so spiritually unfit. Love them, but I won't do it. Okay. So I don't tell anyone for a year, but that's about 4 months. And I think it's by the book and it's reasonable. I'm not telling you to do it. It's what I do, because I don't want to compete with it. If they're married or in a relationship, it's different. I don't ask that. Okay. Okay, Robert, use lightly yourself as you know to be despised or loathed. And I despised and loathed my sex conduct, my relationship conduct when I got here. And it isn't that way today. And, you know, God's given me tremendous healing. And a lot of it is based on what's happened with me to be able to share all of the pain and problems that I had from the past with others, to be helpful to others. That, to me, created a lot of healing in my life. Robert, would you read the last paragraph? Thank you.
Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it.
Thank you, Robert. Okay, so whatever my ideal turns out to be, I must be willing to grow towards it. It says there, I'm not going to get it overnight. One of the things that's helpful sometimes is to write your sex ideal on an index card, and once a week in your 11th step, check it out, just so it becomes more a part of your consciousness. We must be willing to make amends where we did harm, provided we just still don't make harm more, create any more harm in doing so. In other words, this is a very important principle. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. So what it means is I treat any other problem the same way I would treat sex. So it's saying, what that's saying right there is, in other words, we treat sex as we would another problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. The catch is there. Sometimes I don't want the answer. I don't want the answer God's going to give me. Even, you know, I don't even want to ask it because I don't want it. But it says if I want it. So it says I treat any other problem the same way as sex. I'm having problems at my work. I'm having problems with a coworker at work. Okay, I talk it over with someone. But I take it to God. I ask God about each specific matter. He tells me right there that he cares about every single specific thing in my life. And then the next one, and I'm just, Kimberly, the right answer will come if we want it. But what I want to say is not the wrong answer, the right answer. If I want it, do I want it? Well, you might have to be praying for a week or two, right, Jan, to be willing to get the right answer, because we know sometimes when it comes to relationships and sex, we don't want it. So sometimes when someone's calling me and say, well, I've been in prayer, and I'm saying, well, do you really want the right answer? Do you really want to hear what God has to say? because sometimes we don't. Kimberly, thank you. Robert, would you read the next paragraph, honey?
Yes. God alone can judge our sex situation. That's the right paragraph?
Yes, yes, honey.
God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
Okay, that is one of the most important principles in the Big Book. We let God be the final judge. And this as a sponsor, because, you know, the way that I sponsored and the way I did the work before the Big Book Awakening, I got it at 12 years, right, was different. Sponsors were running people's lives. It is messed up. But this is, you guys know it. You know what? You see it around the program, right? As a sponsor, I can tell them what I think or feel about something or some input or some, most importantly, my experience, not my input, my experience. But I have to send them to prayer and meditation to let God be the final judge in everything. Okay. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. And sometimes that's coming within myself. It's the way I'm even inside, right? I got to get quiet. Have you ever had that conflict about a relationship, boom, 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 boom. It's like a tennis match inside of your soul, you know, blah, 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 and you just got to get calm. I'm asking you what you have, and I'm laughing now. I'm cracking myself up because I know you well enough to know that you have. Okay, Kimberly, go on, honey.
Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience.
Thank you. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal. Okay. Part of my ideal is not to cheat on the relationship I'm in. Right? And to be faithful and to be honest, and I end up cheating. Does this mean that I'm going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on me and my motives. This is about motives. And as I look at my motives in relationships, I begin to look at my motives in a lot of other areas of my life. And I had bad motives in relationships out there for all the years I was. It was all about what you could do for me. It was never about what I could do for you. I may make you think it's about what I can do for you, but underneath it was a manipulation to get from you what I wanted to get from you. Very insincere and very sick. It says, if we are sorry, so let's say that, you know, I'm having an affair with someone and that's not part of my sex ideal. It depends, if I'm going to get drunk, it depends on my motives. If we are sorry for what we have done, I think this is so important because I think this can be applied to any area of my life. That I'm doing and behaving in a way that I don't think is aligned with the kind of principles that I want to live in my sobriety. It is not the way a spiritual basis of life is. If I stop it, but I'm not sorry, right, for what I have done. I'm not sorry for what I've done. And if I'm sorry for what I have done, if I'm not sorry, I think it's a problem. If I'm sorry for what I have done and have the honest desire to let God take me to better things. This was incredible. There's another example right there in the sex inventory that my sex life, my relationship life, my friendship life, my conduct in the hands of God will be better. That was astounding to me. Better than anything I can do. We believe we will be forgiven if I have the honest desire. We believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, and I think that's in any area of my life, but especially in sex they're talking about, but in any area of my life, I can't continue to harm others. We are quite sure to drink. And they're not telling us this is a theory. Remember, this spiritual life is not a theory. They're saying here, it's not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. And usually the person hustling the newcomer, the person that's got 5-6 years hustling a newcomer in a meeting, okay, it's not the newcomer that's going to drink. It's usually the person hustling them. And I'll tell you something, and Jan will tell you this, and Kylie and Rick, in the rooms of BBA in San Diego, we will kick you out, won't we, Jan? You get 3 warnings and you are effing out. You start hustling newcomers in our meeting, it will not happen. we won't put up with it. And I wish more meetings would do that. And you know what? I don't want to say it's just men hustling newcomer women, because it is women sometimes too. But we know that so many women have come and said how safe they feel in BBA. And that is, to me, such a gift, you know. Oh, Joe knows, because Joe would be my heavy down there at Old Town. We'd warn them 3 times. I think Joe would warn them once. Joe, they were lucky. If it was me, they'd get 3 warnings. If it was Joe, they each kick their ass out. Can I see you, Joe? Am I kidding? Joe knows. Oh, Joe was tough. Dylan's laughing. You were there, you know, Dylan. Joe was tough. Okay, go on, Kimberly.
All right. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when a yield would mean heartache.
Thank you. That's the end of what we're going to read for right now. Thank you so much. Okay, to sum up about sex. When we get, this is a 4-part little exercise right here that you can mark it if you want. We earnestly pray for the right ideal. Number one, I pray for the right ideal. The right ideal for me is a vision of what God would have something be. It's the right idea. It's the what I can have a right ideal for work. I can have a right ideal for friendship. I can have a right ideal for intimate relationships. But so it says to some of us that we earnestly pray for the right ideal. Number one, for guidance in each questionable situation. Number two, for sanity. Number three, and for the strength to do the right thing. Because you know what? I may know the right thing, but I don't want to do it. You know? So it says this was what spoke to me when I was new in the program, because I didn't date for 2 years because I, you know, when they used to say don't date for a year, I thought I am twice as sick as those people. I better not date for 2 years. So I didn't date for 2 years. It was the best thing I ever did. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. That's what I did. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. So that is the end of the sex. I'm going to read the rest of it after I give you some examples. If everyone has their sample packet, does everybody have their sample packet? Would you open it up to Bill? We're going to read an example. Is everybody opened up to it? Robert, I'm just checking. Mariana, you got it, honey? Does everybody have it? Helen, you got it? Okay, honey. So first of all, I'm going to pray for God to reveal to me what names need to be on my relationship inventory. And there are some things in my life, relationships are more important than my intimate ones, like my relationship with God. A lot of people have written about God on this. Don't do anything that you're not guided by God to put on that list. So after I have the list, I put one name on the relationship. It's Bill, friend's husband. My motives for getting involved. This is my inventory. It's a different name. If you share tonight some inventory, I ask that no matter how safe you think it is, that you change the name. Because we want to protect the anonymity of the people, but you can share. My motives for getting involved were I wanted to have sex. This is when I was in my disease, by the way. When I wanted to have sex, feel wanted, feel powerful. I wanted to get more secure and important in my relationship with him and his wife in the horse business. My motive was to improve my importance in their lives. I wanted to be more important. So to do that, I had an affair with the husband. Doesn't that make sense? I was driven by fear of not getting love and losing the chance at power. My specific conduct in the relationship had been secret meetings. At first, I turned him down, thought he was kidding. Then I had the affair, would break it off, then go back. I couldn't stay stopped. I was never able to end it until I left him to have another affair with a man he introduced me to. The major points that came up in the relationship are how I hid and we lied to his wife. I did a lot of drinking and drugs. He introduced me to a man that I had an affair with and did some illegal business with. I avoided Bill and sold my horses because I left another relationship and was financially poorer. I lied about where I went and what I did, how it ended. I don't know if it ever did. I just changed men. We never really talked about it. I got out, sold horses, and disappeared into my addiction. I made amends to him at 12 years sober. I couldn't find him until I was 12 years sober. Let's flip it over. Okay, look at the relationship and answer these 9 questions. Where had I been selfish? Stealing my friend's husband, cheating on my relationship, not telling him that I didn't want to. Ignoring how my behavior hurt his family and my relationship. I didn't call when I would be late. Where had I been and when I would be late, it would be a day, not an hour. Where had I been dishonest? I lied to my partner, Bill, his wife, his kids, my friends about where I went, when and with whom. I was dishonest because I didn't tell him. I didn't do what I said I would do. Where had I been inconsiderate? Not thinking about how I was hurting Bill, his family, his employees, or my boyfriend. I was inconsiderate because I didn't think about his feelings or what he needed. Whom did I hurt? Look around the relationship. You'll see there it says the ripple effect. When you hurt the person you're in a relationship, look to see how it rippled out to hurt others, okay? Whom did I hurt? I hurt Bill, his family, his wife, his employees. When he had a weekend, he owned a big business. And when he had a weekend with me of partying and drinking, he didn't go into the office and treat his employees well. He was burnt out. Bill's kids, I made amends to one of his kids also at 12 years sober. My job, my friends and family. Did I arouse jealousy? Remember, I told you to just look at how you aroused it in the person, but also how did you bring it into the relationship? Okay. I aroused jealousy in my boyfriend, in Bill's wife and his kids. Did I arouse suspicion? Yes. And my boyfriend, Bill's wife and people in the horse show circuit raised suspicion in their friends and kids. People knew what was going on. Did I arouse bitterness? Family was probably bitter that he was gone a lot. In my attitude toward Bill, towards me, push, pull, love, hate, and in his wife. I didn't, at this time that I wrote this, this was, you know, 18 years ago, 19 years ago when BBA first came to San Diego and I was first doing it. So where was I at fault? I didn't have reacting out of fear. I lied, I cheated, I was selfish and inconsiderate, said I'd be there for my boyfriend, my family, never showed up. But I would say today, you know, knowing this, that I was reacting out of the fear of not getting what I wanted, which is usually power over people through sex. That's what I would, and connection. But I use sex as something I could use over people, men especially, to be in control. I also had relationships with women. So it was a tool for me to not have to feel my own insecurity, okay? So I want to tell you an example. Well, let me finish this first. Okay, so I get all this on paper and then I do the last question is what should I have done instead? Do not write not gotten in the relationship in the first place because that's probably what I should have written in all of them. But they're pushing me to see what I would do so that from this question 9, I can form a sound, insane, God-given sex ideal, okay? What should I have done instead? I should have respected the covenant of marriage. I never did. Turned him down, not enough power, should have prayed and gotten power from God to speak my truth, been honest, considerate of others' welfare, and honored my commitment. Okay. So after I finish all writing all of my conduct, sex, relationships, okay, you're going to go back and in a meditative, prayerful way, you're going to put them in front of you. You can spread them out if you want, and you're going to read question 9. This is when you're all done and done the harms too. And you're going to read question 9 and in a prayerful, meditative way, you're going to form a sane and sound God-given sex ideal. Look at the harms, lying to Bill, to my boyfriend, to Bill's wife, stealing his wife's, their children's employees, and my boyfriend's peace of mind, stealing their father's time. Okay, so I wanted to read that to you and let me see the time. I wanted to read that to you and there's one more in here that if you want to read it, but I first want to go, I want you to go to the, before we do that, I want to tell you about how I brought jealousy, bitterness, and suspicion into a relationship. When I was 2.5 years sober, I got involved in a relationship with this doctor who I was very much in love with. And, but I didn't trust him because I didn't trust me. The only basis I had about trusting anyone in a relationship was my own history. And I didn't have any history that you could trust anyone. So I got to share with you some of the crazy stuff I did. So I was dating this doctor. He lived down here in San Diego and I lived half the year in Palm Rancho Mirage and half the year in San Diego. So like one night he would say to me that he was going to the country club to have dinner, right? And he'd call me when he got home after the dinner. He's going with some friends, right? So I don't believe he's going with friends, not at all. So what I had to do is I called the restaurant, and God, I'm so crazy. I called the restaurant and I acted like I was a friend and I was coming to dinner and I was bringing a gift and I wanted to see how many people were there. I wanted to know how many chairs they had at the table for this reservation, right? Like, did they have three? Because from what he said, he was going with this couple, there should be three, or was there a reservation before? Anyway, I found out that, I don't think it was true, I don't remember, but that's the kind of sneaky stuff. That's not the only sneaky stuff. That's how I brought my own suspicion, bitterness in. This is what else I did. So I found out that there was a gift given to some woman on his credit card, right? I had moved in with him and I moved out the next day, by the way. But that, I was so glad I moved out. But anyway, when I was living with him for that short time and always hanging at the house, I saw that there was on his credit card that he had sent this gift to this woman, right? I didn't know it was to a woman, I'm sorry, that he had sent this gift and it came from this particular store, right? So I called the store and acted like his secretary to find out what was the gift, where was it bought, right? I mean, I am a sneaky little devil, right? And you know what? I found it all out. I could do any of that stuff. I am a PI. You may not know it, but I am. And I brought all of this suspicion, but you know what? I was right. I had to get out of it because he was so emotionally dishonest with other women. And I was with him for 3 years and it was, I love the guy. We have a great, if they see him today, we have a great friendship. He's a great guy, but he wasn't honest. And I brought a lot of suspicion in and all the little tricks that I used to like to play to find out if he was being honest. Oh God, isn't that crazy? So could that give you an idea of how you can bring it into a relationship? Okay. I have done so much insane behavior behind relationships because I'm so sure you're going to betray me. You're not going to love me. But also, while I'm doing that, I'm betraying you. You know, I was in a relationship with an undercover cop for 11 years that tried to kill me 4 times. Let me tell you, I did more to him than he ever did to me. I cheated on him endlessly. I did horrible things to him, but I would never look at it because I never wanted him to be right, because if he would be right, I would be wrong, and that was never going to happen. And I'll tell you more about that when we get into 5, 6, and 7. So would you turn your sample packet over to the two examples of sex ideal? You guys see him? Okay. Jan, do you have your packet? No? Okay, no problem. Okay, I'm going to read the first sex ideal. The reason I put these two ideals here is because I thought that they fit a lot of people. And you can use anything you want off of these ideals that help you. And the ideal that you write should start with God in the future. God, please help me. I'm going to read the first one. And let me see. Mariana, do you have one?
Yeah.
I want you to read the second one. I'm going to read the first one, okay? Do you have the sex ideals in front of you?
Yes.
Huh? Yes. In the packet? Okay, you guys, follow me. I'm going to read the first one. God in the future. I would like to be a person who has sex with people that I truly care about as an act of love and a way to be closer. I want to have had some time to get to know the person so that I can make a decision that is based more in reality and less in sex or in just not wanting to be alone, filling the gap. I do not get involved with people who are committed in a relationship on any level or while I am committed. And I am sensitive to their feelings and don't get involved with someone that they have strong feelings for. I should wait to emotionally commit to someone until I have dated them for at least 3 months. Mariana, you want to read the second one?
Sure. God, please help me make my decisions about love and sex that they be based more in reality, aligned with your will and not simply in carnal desire. Help me avoid the fear of being alone. I want to be a woman who has sex with someone after having had some time to get to know that person as an act of love and a way of getting closer or becoming more intimate. God, please enable me to be willing to be honest and to communicate openly with regards to our differences, our goals, dreams, sex, and finances. Please help me to bring a God consciousness into my relationships. Please help me to have a relationship that is free of all abuse. I want to love all others as they are and not hope to change them. You, God, make no mistakes. Help me not to get involved with someone who is committed in a relationship at any level or while I am committed to someone else. Please help me to be an equal partner in every way possible. Help me avoid the temptation to control others with attention, affection, gifts, love, or sex. Please help me to act sexually as I would want a friend to act towards me. That is with honor, respect, and love. Amen.
Thank you, Mariana. Does anyone have any questions about the inventory before I ask a few of you to read? About how to do it or any?
Tyler, real quick.
Yes.
On the suspicion part, so you mentioned a couple of things that like you did. Mm-hmm. Would you include things that you sat and thought about and considered doing, but you didn't follow through with them?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I never thought about that, but if that's something that's coming to your consciousness, I would trust that.
Got it.
You know? So I think that's great, you know, because I never saw the idea of how it says, how did I arouse? How did I arouse it? Which it seems logical to me. It's always in the other person, right? How did I arouse bitterness in the person I'm with? How did I arouse suspicion? How did I arouse jealousy? But what I'm telling you about how did I bring it into the relation comes from Bob O. And what's Bob O got? 55 years of sobriety. And I just think it's a great thing, you know, to look at it that way also.
Okay, perfect.
Anybody?
I have a question.
Sure, honey.
Nobody came up for me to put on my sex inventory this time. Mm-hmm. Since since I worked with you.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of my relationships I've had on Fifth Step, so.
Mm-hmm.
So well, is that okay?
That's fine, but why don't you take to meditation and ask God any relationships beyond intimate relationships that may need to be on there? Because you can write on friendships, you can write on God, you can write on money. I had a great, one of the most profound ones was a gal I worked with that really had, she had a relationship with money like it was a person. And intuitively, I suggested she just write it in the relationship. She got so much truth. It was absolutely so profound. So I would expand, you know, it a little. Does that make sense to you, Marie?
It does.
Yeah. See if God's going to reveal anything else like, you know, God.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions?
Tyler, I just wanted to point out that something I actually didn't even notice until recently. I was working mm-hmm. with a sponsee. And mm-hmm. The worksheets
mm-hmm.
online don't mm-hmm. say, how did I arouse jealousy? They say, did I arouse jealousy? Did I arouse suspicion? So I just had her cross them out and put how did, but I just-
Oh, that's fine.
I just want to let you know that because it's not correct on the worksheets that are online.
Oh, honey, that it should be the sheet I just read.
It's correct in the workbook, but on the
No. What I mean is the one I just read. I'm just looking at it. Oh, it says, did I? Yeah, I think that, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any questions? Joe, would you share for some about what you've seen in your relationship inventory? Would you do that?
Did you want people to read some first of their
They
own?
Can read some if they want. Does anyone want to read? Would anybody like to read one to the group? It's always good to let people get to know you. Okay. Anybody want to read one out there from the Sober Mafia? Okay.
I could read one from my last inventory, but I just don't have one from this.
Well, I would like to let's just see if anyone's current, Marie.
Okay, gotcha.
Let's just see a minute. Anyone want to read one? Mariana, Kimberly, I know you guys have written them because you're already done with it. Kimberly, do you want to read one? Oh, no, I know you probably don't because I know the ones you have. Do you want him?
I forgot.
I probably don't.
Yeah.
I could read my goofy sex ideal. Mm-hmm.
If your sex ideal is goofy, we got to talk.
Well, if it's goofy, I sent it to you. I think everything.
Did you send it to me?
What?
When did you send it to me?
I sent it to you. You didn't read it?
No. Well, should I? Okay. Anyone want to read one? Otherwise, we'll be probably closing out earlier tonight, which is fine with me. Okay, Joe.
Okay, I'll share.
Yeah, so, you've had a lot of good experience. You know, Joe's my bookend in this life.
So one thing I do want to talk about with when you're working with someone is, at least what I've experienced is I've went through these steps with people and they write their ideal, and I did it myself too. And I write this extravagant ideal and like have all these ideas of like, oh, like I'm a nun in a convent now, you know what I mean? And it's like, no, we're not going there. You know, let's be very realistic with my ideal. I look at my question 9 to find out, you know, what I could have done differently to write my ideal. And I don't get very out there with it. Like, because I don't want to make expectations or things that I'm never going to be able to live up to. I don't want to build a wall here that I'm never going to be able to cross. And it's very unrealistic, you know, some things that I've done. I mean, I was not going to, I'm not going to have sex until I'm with someone for, give me a break. You know, I broke that ideal. So it's like, I'm not trying to, there's certain things that I've done and I'm looking at that and I'm writing my ideal surrounding the things that I could have done differently or I should have done differently, that I need more power to do differently this time. And I'm very careful not to push my ideal on someone else. Mm-hmm. My relationship is my relationship. And I will say something about my relationship. I was a runner my whole life, okay? I couldn't be with anybody. So part of my ideal is was about just being honest and not running. I mean, seriously, because something comes up, I'm uncomfortable. I don't think that someone's going to be able to receive me or deal with me, and I'm out. You know what I mean? I fuck up some way and I'm out. And it's easier to run than to stay and face it and to face issues and problems. And I finally found someone that I was able to do that with. But I will say that my relationship is my relationship, and I'm not going to be the arbiter of anyone's relationship and what they do. And when I talk to people I work with on the subject of dating newcomers, you know, the person who's really going to get hurt here is the person with time. That's really who's going to get hurt here. Cause I've seen it. I've seen it a lot. I've seen guys go after people that are new, and they fall in love and they have all this, and then the newcomer disappears or something happens and they're the one that are brokenhearted. And I see it over and over again. And so that's how I come to that with people that I work with. It's like, you're putting yourself at risk. Get hurt here because that newcomer is just being a newcomer, you know. And there is a difference between being new and returning. You're not new, you're returning, bitch. I seen you here for years. Anyway, I'm just kidding. But my sex life now, I'm with a partner now who's sober, which I never wanted to be with someone sober because they're fucking crazy, because I know sober people are crazy because I'm crazy. And I was like, I'm never going to be with someone like me. I can't, you know, maybe I'll get a good Al-Anon because they'll take care of me. But like another alcoholic or another addict, give me a break. Like the way I think to be with someone like that, and I found someone with more time than me, which was a suggestion, was working a program, and I have a really good relationship today, better than I ever expected. And that doesn't mean that in the beginning of my sobriety, I didn't do a lot of crazy things. I did a lot of crazy things. I had a lot of sex in sobriety, you know? You can do everything you did loaded, sober. And you will see how it makes you feel, though, sober versus the way it made you feel when you were using. And to each their own, you know, if that's what works for you. I work with a lot of people that have problems surrounding that, you know? And I don't try and tell them, I need you to get off the apps, or I need you to do this, or I treat it like any other problem, and I treat it like drugs in a way. It's like bop till you drop, because I couldn't stop you from drinking and drugging, and I'm probably not gonna be able to stop you from going out and hooking up either. And you're gonna get to a place where you have to have a surrender with that, with your relationship with God, and it's not gonna come from me. So each to each their own in this part. And I'm very careful not to put judgment. And I'm also careful who I work with and what I disclose to them, because I'm not going to talk about sexual escapades with someone who has only been with one person and they've never had sex until they got married. And then with someone who's selling their ass for drugs, you know what I mean? We're going to have a different conversation because we can relate on a different level. You know what I mean? So I'm very careful. No, your audience and know who you're working with, because I'm not gonna try and deter people also. But I have a lot of experience around this, and I think it's a very intimate conversation with people. I've had a lot of help here. Tyler's helped me a lot in this area, because the person I was and I'm just not that person anymore. Mm-mm. And the biggest thing in my ideal is honesty. Is about me being honest with someone. And it is so hard for me sometimes to just speak, mm-hmm. to just let someone know and be vulnerable and tell someone how I'm really feeling, how that really made me feel, what's really going on with me, that they're gonna be able to receive that and take care of that. And I have to take risk. And it's like this whole idea of trust. Trust, I have to invest trust. You know what I mean? I can't just expect it. I have to put it out there. And if they don't break it, then I have built that trust. And that's what I do with my relationships. And I do it with all my relationships, not just my partner, but in a lot of my relationships. And I put myself out there more. And that has a lot to do with fear inventory, has a lot to do with this relationship with God and my fear. The fear is not holding me so much. So I'm able to put myself out there more. And I think that for me, being an alcoholic and an addict, maybe that's an excuse, but I've had a very hard time speaking up for myself, mm-hmm. confrontation, you know, even in relationships, that these fears I'm going to see that crop up. It's a lot of fear around money, a lot of fear around sex. And most of my fear inventory, like all those fears of being alone, it all shows up in my relationships. The fear of confrontation shows up in my relationships. The fear of being loved, all this stuff is in my personal relationships. And so I can be very vulnerable here and get very close to people here. And your life can change in this area. My life has completely changed in this area. Completely changed in this area. And we have fun in my relationship. And so I'm very careful too to let people know that their rules are their rules, and I'm not here to tell them if they wanna believe a certain way and do a certain thing. I mean, I know people who've been in throuples. You know, I attempted it too. So what? Who cares? You know, I tried it out. People were talking about it. Let's try it, and I didn't like it, so I got out of it. You know, so it's to each their own, and I try not to judge here, and be very careful not to judge here. And hurt people, because where I came from, like where I'm centered in my inventory, the things I did drinking and drugging, you know, I've already mentioned this before, I really have no right to judge anyone and their behavior and what they do. So that's all I have to share. Does anyone have any inventory they wanna share? I'll ask again. Mariana, sex inventory?
Yeah, I'll do one. So this is a girl, and it was casual sex. And my motives for getting involved with her was that I knew that she liked me. She was much younger than me. I knew that she liked me. She lived next door to my mum and dad, so I grew up with her next door. I would flirt with her. I would tease her. I would kiss her, and I got involved with a serious relationship and started having affairs with this girl, using drink and having sex with her. I used her. I wanted to feel powerful and I wanted to be in control. I wanted to feel good that this young woman liked and wanted me. And when my mum died, I was so drunk. I went next door to have sex with her, and that's how it started. And then I couldn't stop. My specific conduct was there was lots of secrecy, had the affair on and off. I couldn't end it with her until she got involved with another woman, even though I wanted her to want and like me more than this other woman, if that makes sense. Having power over people through sex and drinking, I didn't want to feel insecure. I would go away for the weekends with her and drink and have sex, and left my partner at home with the children. Once I started having sex with her, I couldn't stop. Major points that came up were I lied to my partner, I hid from her. this girl was a secret. I would go away for a weekend with her, drinking, having sex. I was trying to control my partner and this young woman. I didn't stop acting out on how badly I treated this woman. I knew I used her, but I couldn't stop it. I was so needy and desperate to be wanted. And how it ended or how it is now, this woman stopped wanting to see me. She wouldn't hook up with me. I introduced her to her partner and I had to step right back. I did make amends to her and I never see her now. I wanted to have both my partner and to be with this woman, particularly when I was drunk, to get my way and so that this young woman would continue to see me. I was selfish because I wanted this woman to love me and want me, but I didn't want her in the same way. And I would just drink and have sex with her and I continue to be flirty. Where had I been dishonest? I lied to my partner and to this woman, thinking that I was wonderful and that this woman wanted me so much. Where had I been inconsiderate? I never thought of my partner or this woman. Well, I did, but not enough to stop it. Or the children. I never thought of this woman's mother or my family as they live next door to each other. Who did I hurt? Anne, the children, this woman and her mum. How did I arouse jealousy? I kept meeting this woman. I kept disappearing. And then I would leave the woman to go back home to my partner. How did I arouse suspicion? I would disappear for weekends. How did I arouse bitterness? Others were more important than my partner, and my partner was more important than this woman. Where was I at fault? I was in a relationship and should never have got involved with this young woman. What should I have done instead? I should have respected my partner and remained committed to her. I should have respected the woman next door and left her alone. I compromised my integrity and the specific harms. I took people's peace of mind and I gave lots of mixed messages.
Thank you.
That was great.
That was great.
Not really nice, are we? Am I?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not about being nice. It's about what works.
Yeah.
That's all we're seeing.
And what doesn't work.
after Sunday doing inventory, doing the sex conduct inventory, it really hit me that flirting and being outrageous was something that I do regularly with women and men. And I was in a situation on Monday where I was out walking with my partner and I was on the phone to another woman. And I was about to be really quite sexually flirty with her. And it was like, God just tapped me on the shoulder and said, don't do it. Just don't do it. And I never did it. And it was like the first time ever that I didn't do it. And I'm so grateful. So, and I've been able to share that with my partner. And the two of us are both so grateful. The changes that are happening. I mean, we're now praying together, Tyler and Joe.
I know. It's so great.
I know. It's lovely.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Would someone like to share an inventory?
I want to point out when Mariana, that was perfect. And it's like, it's still like a synopsis of the relationship, you know, like the way the inventory is breaking out, like the motive, what happened, what my conduct was. It's not, we're not getting into, which you didn't, which is great. We're not getting into, when I'm hearing a fifth step, I'm not sitting here all night listening to every detail and point about the relationship. I don't care, you know, get to the facts, get to the points, you know, and if I have questions, I ask. So when I'm hearing inventory, I make sure that we're just doing the synopsis of the relationship. It's not story time here. We don't have to get into like inventory. The more I'm trying to explain it, I'm trying to justify my behavior, I'm trying to justify my conduct, we're not getting into that. We're just, it's very like factual, like a little tiny story. So clear and concise. Well,
that's so good. Anybody want to share? Otherwise we will close it out. Well, I'm going to ask a question of Miss Kylie, because she's done such great step work. And, you know, could you just share a little bit about what you saw when you did it and how it affected you, the changes in your life after doing the sex inventory, Kylie? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, I relate them. I'll take off my dorky glasses with the ring light reflecting in them. I relate the most to just what both of you said tonight about the motives, because when I came in, I always, even when I was using, I really thought of myself as being just a very kind, compassionate, loving, not so selfish person. And I was, everyone's laughing. Yeah, when I had to write the motives down, I saw, so I don't remember because they're not in front of me and I haven't looked at them in a while, but a lot of times it was like you said, Tyler, just trying to get something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, I think it's in step 3 where it talks about us being super nice. And even when we're being nice, we're creating chaos. So that was the thing that I saw the most. I was like, oh, I thought my motive was like, oh, I just fell in love with you, you know, or I just loved you, or I just thought you were this and that. And my experience was such that for the most part, I was trying to get something. You know, you mentioned power, Tyla. That was definitely something that I sought from people's status too. Like a lot of times I can get hooked up by status. And so a lot of times I thought if somebody is at a level, like I was always looking at people like you're below me or you're above me. And if you're above me, then I want to be in a relationship with you because my status is going to increase in other people. So that was like a thing that I saw that was actually kind of shocking. and it repeated over and over again, right? The first time I did this, I think I had like 14 inventories. And the last time I had like 3 or 4. And some of those were just like the sticky ones that I wanted to clear out. But I think in terms of relationships, you know, because you asked like how have things changed? I have been a lot slower to get into relationships. I haven't gotten into nearly as many. And when I've dated people, I have been a lot more cautious because I get that thing. I'm sure a lot of us can relate. I get that like dopamine hit in the beginning. And I'm like, this is so good. This is the best thing ever. Like, and then now I'm like, when I get that dopamine, I'm like, this is probably not the relationship I should get in right now. And I've actually found that in dating, if it seems a little boring, that's the better one to pursue. You know, it's like, oh, this is just boring me. Like I'm not getting the brain chemicals that I want. So maybe this is the one to actually consider. So I'm not in a relationship and I've just been moving a lot slower, being a lot more cautious, taking advice from people that have a lot more sober sobriety than me who can see the pitfalls before I can. You know, that's something that, you know, Tyla helped me out with just a month ago or so. I was going into a bad direction. And so that's kind of been the experience. I feel like I'm not in the relationship that I want. I haven't created the relationship that I want yet, but I'm saying no to the ones I don't want a lot faster and a lot sooner. And I'm recognizing those like red flags a lot better. So that really came from doing this work. And I don't know if that made any sense to anybody, but that's been my experience.
that was so good. I'd like to hear from Jan. Jan, would you share what you've seen and how it changed your behavior around relationships?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Jan. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Yeah, I mean, the sex inventory has been really profound for me. And every time that I do a sex inventory, it's kind of, it's grown and it's changed. But I remember the first time that I did it, and I really appreciate Joe talking about not setting these lofty goals, because I remember I did the workshop with Pat and Leanne, and people were getting up saying like, oh, I'm gonna wait until I get married. And I was looking at my step partner like, whoa, I'm not ready for that, you know. And so it was more realistic, but you know, it was just realizing that I was being really selfish in my relationships, and that I was always thinking about what I can get out of it rather than what I can put into it. And so that was a big realization for, you know, the first time around. And also realizing that my motives for getting involved in a lot of relationships were to fill that hole within myself. They're very similar to my motives for getting drunk and high, you know? And so it's just another thing that I'm turning to try and fix this, you know, internal unmanageability within myself. And I'm seeking validation from other people, and I'm seeking escape from my emotional pain through sex and validation from other people. And so being able to see that in black and white very clearly helped me to form my sex ideal and really want to bring God into that relationship. And I remember clearly in my first sex ideal that, like, if I can't, you know, feel you in this relationship and I'm not bringing you into this relationship, I want you to end this relationship and keep me from getting myself in trouble in those relationships. And it was funny because I wrote my sex ideal and I hadn't looked at it in a long time. And then I was taking a sponsee through the work and I, you know, got to the sex ideal part and I got to reread it. And it was maybe like 6 or 7, maybe even, I think about like 7 months after I'd written it, and it had totally come true. And I had kind of forgotten what I had written about. And I saw how God was protecting me in these relationships because I wanted something deeper. I wanted a real connection with somebody. I didn't want that carnal pleasure like we were hearing in the example. And so getting to see God really protecting me, even though I wasn't fully conscious of it, was really profound for me. And then, you know, this more recent inventory that I've done, like Joe said as well, it's like learning to be honest and standing up for what my needs are and what my, and not being so codependent in my relationships, because I really, in my last round of steps, saw how difficult it is for me to be confrontational in my relationships, friends and, you know, intimate relationships. And so, you know, part of my sex ideal this time was asking God to give me the strength to stand up for myself and not settle for anything than the love that I deserve, you know? And so I too, like Kylie, have been a little bit quicker to say no to the relationships that aren't working. And I still make mistakes though, you know, but like we talked about, it's the motives involved, you know, and just the fact that I'm paying attention to this stuff and being mindful of it, and looking at it and talking to my mentors in and out of this program and talking to God about it and really sitting in quiet time and asking God, like, is this the right thing for me to be doing? And then listening for the answers that come, like just going through that process, even though I might be taking some actions that, you know, maybe aren't the best, you know, but like the fact that I'm taking a look at it and taking these steps is such a huge change from who I was before. Cause every relationship I was in before I got sober, I cheated on my significant other. I lied. I used them for money, you know, all the things that, you know, somebody, a sick person does. And so to see that change, and it's funny, I was talking to Kylie about it, how like normal people probably don't really look at their conduct in relationships like we do. And so what a gift that we get to go from being sick and broken to coming and bringing harmony into our relationships and bringing God into our relationships and just completely changing the dynamic of how we interact with others in our relationships, both intimate and friendships and work and everything. And so, you know, this is such a profound shift in my behavior, and it's such a beautiful process. I'm really stoked that everybody's along for the ride. And that's all I got.
Thank you, Jan. Would anybody else like to share in general about sex inventory, what it's shown you in your life, what it's meant in your life? If you don't want to read an inventory, you're welcome to share.
Wendy, did you want to share?
Hi, I'm Wendy and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Joe. I wasn't going to, but I will. It's funny because the first time I did the BBA, I wrote on like throughout my life, right? But I've been in a relationship for a really long time. And my husband and I have been married 19 years, but we met like 37 years ago. There was a lot of drama in our relationship over the years before we got married. And, you know, after doing the, and I was like Kylie, I thought I'm just like a really loving, kind, caring, good person. And I always put other people first. And then I started to see how manipulative and sick and selfish, you know, I am. And not only in sex relationships, but in relationships with people that I became friends with and even worked with, that it was a codependent work relationship. And things that I found myself doing were like, here I thought I was this big stand-up person being really helpful and good, but really what was I doing? I was self-seeking. I felt like my husband wasn't giving me the love I needed, so I was getting praise at work. I was getting pats on the back at work. I felt special. I felt important. I was the only person that could do this job for this place, these two men, you know, in this place, and they were always just singing my praises, and it made me, and it was so codependent and sick, and I didn't know that, right? But when I did my fist up with Tyler, I mean, I knew, I kind of was like, I got to get out of here. this is just too much. It's consuming, and it's unhealthy, and it's taking me away from my family. But it's really amazing, because as a result of doing sex conduct inventory, and I've written a couple on people that I have relationships with, that it just, looking at it from this perspective, just took it a little bit further for me on a couple people that I got really stuck with in my resentment, and I couldn't seem to get past it. So it was helpful for me to do that. I typically, I don't always do that, but I did do that a couple times. And it was really good because it helped me see my conduct in relationships. It's really what it's about. It's not so much about, for me, like the way, like, it's not about, I love how Joe was explaining, it's not about the act of sex. It's just, it's what I did, how I treated people, how I interacted, how I got what I wanted, how I used people and I didn't even see it. And then with my husband, fortunately he did the BVA for Al-Anon, but like, I don't even know why he stayed with me as long as he did, because we were like really sick, both of us. And our relationship today is so different. It's not perfect, but we have grown as a married couple and as parents, and our family has completely changed from the way it was just even 2 years ago. It's amazing. Like when I had gotten to a point where I was like, you know what? I'm doing all this work. It's all about me. I'm doing all this work. My husband's not doing the work. I'm just like, he thinks that I'm the problem. And it was just, we were still sick, right? But he started doing the work, and things started to change in our relationship. And it's just amazing. Because Joe also said, I was with this person for all these years, but I couldn't really be vulnerable. I didn't know how to be vulnerable with my own husband, who I've known since I was like freaking 21 years old, and I'm 58 now. I couldn't be vulnerable with him. And I always have this kind of tough thing going on, and we're both really strong personalities, so we butt heads a lot. And I was, and it was horrible for our kids to have to hear us arguing and right fighting all the time about things. And so, that has become so rare in our marriage and in our family now. And that is a huge gift, because I was going to divorce him. I was going to leave him. And then he started going to Al-Anon and did the work. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to give it some time and see. I'm just going to hold on and see what God can do in his life and what this program can do for him. I didn't even think he would do it. I didn't think he would finish it. I didn't think he would get anything out of it. And he did. And it's because it's not about what I think, it's between him and God, right? It's all between us and our creator and what our creator does in us, and so it's just been transformational. It's a true spiritual awakening to do this process. And also, I think I want to go on a big rant about it, but I'm so grateful for Dan Sherman and what he's brought to us and how he put so much work into this, 10 years of working with people and putting this Big Book Awakening workbook together for us to be able to understand how to sponsor other people, understand what the book is about, to have an experience doing it. It like blows my mind and it touches my heart, because I was dying in the rooms of AA, not literally. Like I was like, oh, I just want to die. I'm ready to kill myself. And I have a beautiful family and a loving husband, and I'm miserable in recovery. And that's when BVA came into my life, and Joe took me through the first time, and then I did it with Tyla too. So I'm just so grateful for that, and I'm grateful to be in the workshop, and I'm so happy that we're all doing this, because it is hard and it's not easy to look at ourselves, but it's what's on the other side. That's why I'm doing it again. It hasn't been fun, but it's been really worth it. So that's it. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else have anything that they want to share? Helen, I see you. You want to share, honey? I see you. You haven't shared in a long time.
Well, hello, hello, hello.
Hi, honey.
It's such a beautiful gift to be present for. That's the first thing I want to say. I really thank you and Joe for constantly peeling so that you guys can feed us. It's such a gift. And as far I remember my first sex inventory and what I got out of it, it just blew my mind how manipulative my disease is without my permission and without me even knowing it. And so I was really, really grateful. I cried a lot. My spiritual experience coming out of doing the sex inventory was, you know, just the relief of being conscious and being aware of the harm that I was doing, not only to others, but to myself. I identify with what everybody is saying tonight, you know, being in that dark, dark room and then, you know, having the light be cut on and getting that aha moment of, oh my gosh, I wasn't even aware, you know, getting stuck in, for me and my story, getting stuck in titles and, material things. And I think Kylie and a couple of other people stated how I couldn't possibly be doing any harm because all I'm trying to do is to show you how good I am. And I remember when I was going through CODA, my sponsor at the time, she was like, and I bet you just thought you didn't do anything wrong, did you, Helen? You were the good, faithful minister wife. And, you know, and she told me, she said, what you did was you accepted unacceptable behavior from the gate. And I heard a lot of that tonight when we talk about not having our voice, when we talk about not being able to stand up to ourselves and be true to our own selves, just to, you know, be with someone or get along with somebody. And so it's amazing the peeling that happens, you know, when we're ready. So I am just amazed. I can't say it enough. My very first sex inventory, I just sat there and cried. And I thank God for showing me. So thanks, you guys, for letting me share.
Thank you. Joe, you have anything else to say? I'm going to wrap it up.
No, just to touch on what Jan said. You know, going through this inventory process, this is not about beating ourselves up and getting down on ourselves, especially in sex inventory. I don't care what you've done. I don't care who you were or the things that happened to you. Everyone deserves to get well and everyone deserves to be loved. End of story, okay? So do not even get down on yourself about this. We need to raise up from that. This is not about beating ourselves up. This is about seeing how our lives are gonna change. So that's it.
Thank you. I'm gonna wrap it up, but I just wanna share something. You know, this workshop that Joe and I are doing is a group effort. And one of the things that we're practicing is to be there for others. And I saw numerous people leave early. And I'm going to tell you, you know what? You don't want to be in the workshop and you need to leave early, drop out. But if you can't be here for a group experience, which this is, you know, I'm sure there's lots of people sitting on here that don't want to be here this late. And sometimes Joe and I maybe don't want to, but we are. And I'm telling you this in love because I think it's unfair to the people that are here, that the people decide so aloofly that they're just, I got to go to bed. You know what I mean? And I got to get off the workshop. So if you're not committed, don't stay. And if you are committed, please do stay because you matter to us. But it's important that the rest of the group matter to you. because we are building to me an unselfish way of life as best that we can. So that's my two cents, and I'm going to wrap it up. And I have something I want to share with you. Joe knows me.
More like 75 cents. That wasn't 2 cents. That was 75.
That's 75 cents. I want to share something with you right now, and please listen, because it's something that is new to me that I've been chewing on for a couple, 6 months, and it's really changed my life. And I want you, Joe's laughing because he knows me so well. You know, when I started on that little rant, he knew it was coming, because that's the way I feel. But I'd rather have 10 people on the workshop that are deeply committed than have 30 that aren't and just selfishly flake off of the meeting or don't show up or aren't willing to participate, because I interviewed everybody because this was so important to me and to Joe. You know what I mean? So
and to add on to that, it's just there's like people are being vulnerable sharing.
Yeah.
And for people to slip and be like, I'm done listening to you, and then leave. Yeah. I don't know. It could affect.
And people. If you don't like what I say, put it in the first column. Right, Veronica? Okay. Rick's laughing, right? So, okay, I want to wrap it up. This is the end of writing inventory, okay? And I want to read it to you, and I want you guys to listen, okay? Down on the bottom of page 70, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, and I say, have I been thorough about my personal inventory? We have written down a lot. Have I written down a lot? We have listed and analyzed our resentments. Have I? Don't let anyone tell you don't analyze, utilize. This book says analyze. We analyze our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and fatality. Futility means uselessness, and fatality means deadly. Have you guys begun to comprehend their uselessness and their deadliness? We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. Where and how have I seen that? We have begun to learn tolerance and patience and goodwill toward all men. Have I? Even our enemies, for we look upon them as sick people. Has that happened for me? We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out our path, straighten out the past if we can. Am I willing to do that? I am. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for you what you could not do for yourself. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision, step 3, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. We're at step 4 right now. 1/3 through, they consider this a beginning. If you're a beginner, this is where you're at. When you're a newcomer, you're not a newcomer until you finish the 5th step, as I'll explain to you next week. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And I say to myself, have I? And yes, I have, because I'm never interested in the truth. But I want to go back to this for a minute. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. Are you convinced? Tell me how you're convinced. If I'm working with someone, they're going to explain to me how they're convinced. And I'm going to listen. And then I'm going to talk to you about something to do with self-will. Is doing step 4 God's will? If so, how did I write it if I was blocked by all the self-will I wrote about? If I have no idea how much self-will it takes to block me off from God, how could I have stayed sober all this time by my self-will if my self-will was still blocking me from God? Is it possible that my self-will was removed long before I wrote step 4? Have I considered I may never have been blocked from God, never will be blocked from God? Have I considered any idea or belief that I was or will be blocked from God by my self-will is a total illusion? Produced by playing God and putting my demands on how and when God will show, how it will look and feel, that's an illusion. It says a strenuous effort to face and wait, I got to read it from the book. I just don't want to misread it because this has been tripping me out. And I had to share this with you because it's blowing my mind and I believe it's true. Okay. The strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves that are blocking us. The strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. It's coming from me. Remember it said on page 55 that the great reality is deep down within me, but it's obscured. Obscured is blocked. It's obscured by pomp, by calamity, by the worship of other things, worshiping myself. The idea that I'm ever blocked from God is a delusion. I'm going to write inventory to see that though, because I put demands on God about how he needs to show up in my life. Oh, I don't feel God. I put God in a box. The problem is with me, not with ever being blocked from God. Okay, to believe I am blocked from God by self-will is to believe my self-will, my self-delusion, selfishness, and self-centeredness is more powerful than God. Do I believe that? So for me, this was a huge revelation, and I've always felt that I was never blocked from God, but I really never saw why. Does that make sense? That's why I'm looking at these things within myself that block me. You know, how many times have I heard people, and Joe, you have too, and I felt this. God could never care about me for what I did, right? Remember on the bottom of 40, and I'll wrap this up. On the bottom of 45, when we looked at our honest doubt and prejudice, and we saw that all those ideas came from outside of ourselves, that's what we're looking at here. All the ideas that I think I'm blocked from God by the self-will and all of the ideas that I put onto God, they all come from outside of me. They don't come from inside of me. Does that make sense to you guys? I know you're going to have to chew on it because I had to chew on it too. But the idea that I'm blocked, like I said, if I'm blocked by self-will, self-centeredness, self-delusion, all that. If I'm blocked, I'm saying all those things are more powerful than God, and no way are they. And if I was blocked, I could have never written inventory. And if I was blocked, I would never be sober. But I block it. But how many times people have called me and said, there's no way there's a God. Because if there was a God, this wouldn't have happened. If there was a God, this would have happened. It's me that puts all these blocks on having this relationship with God that I need so desperately. Thank you for letting me share. Let me give you the homework assignment, you guys. Okay, the homework assignment is, if you have your sponsorship assignment guide, the homework assignment is assignment 19. If you have it in front of you, and I want to make sure on this assignment 19, it says to only transcribe in your big book to the bottom of page 75. I want you to transcribe to the bottom of the seven step prayer on 76 so that you don't have to stop between 5, 6, and 7 to do any of that. You guys got that note? Everyone make that note? You guys all make that note? Transcribe in your big book to the bottom of to the bottom of the seven step prayer on page 76. You know that. RJ, where are you going? Sit down. Is he laughing? You, RJ. I just gave a talk. You better stay. Kimberly's laughing. None of you guys are laughing. And Jan's really laughing. And Norm, he's cracking up. Okay. RJ? No. Keep that guy there. Lasso him. Put a seatbelt on his chair.
I'm sore from riding my mom back. I'm sorry. I'm leaning on the chair.
Love you. I'm teasing you.
You can tease me all you want. I'm good with it.
I know. Anyway, it's wonderful to see all of you. If you have any questions, Joe, did I cover everything for next week? I have notes for. Hold on, you guys. Let me just look at the notes. I had notes for the homework assignment. I don't know what the hell I did with them. I think I covered it, didn't I, Joe?
Yes. I think you're good.
Okay. You guys, thank you for
being here. Jose speaking next week, Tyler?
I'm speaking next week on 5, 6, and 7. Joe is speaking on 8 and 9 twice and on step 10. I will be speaking on step 11, and Joe and I will be splitting working with others.
Okay.
So you guys, it's so great to have you here, and it's so great to be with you, and it's an incredible experience for myself and Joe, and I'm very, very grateful to share this journey with you.
big. So thank you, Tyler.
Thank you, Tyler.
I love you.
Let's pray out. Who wants to do the third step prayer? Who knows it by heart? Okay.
I'll do it.
Okay.
God, I come to you and offer myself to thee to release me from the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would witness about your love, your power, and your way of life. May I do your will always.
Awesome. Amen. Thank you, baby. Amen. God bless you. Joe, I'm going to call
you. Thank you, guys.
You.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.